this meeting to order. This is the regularly scheduled meeting of the City of Morro Bay's Citizen Oversight Committee, acting as the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee. And it is Tuesday, January 18th, 2022, and the time is 3:01 p.m. Sarah, I'm not seeing Dana on this meeting, so are you going to be doing the roll calls for us today?
Yes, I will.
Okay, thank you. So could you call the roll, please?
Yes. Member Alexander?
Present.
Member Beckman?
Present.
Member Johnson? Member Peck?
Here.
Member Weiner?
Present.
Vice Chair Spagnola?
Here.
And Chair Martin?
I am here.
And Member Johnson is absent with all their members present.
Okay, thank you. Are there any committee member announcements or presentations? Seeing none, we will move on to the public comment period. This is the time set aside for public comments on issues that are germane to this committee. If it's not on the agenda, or if there's something on the agenda that you cannot wait until that item comes up, you can make comments at this time. Hyland, is there anyone in the queue?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thank you. So we'll close the public comment period. On to the consent calendar. Approval of the minutes for the December 21st, 2021 meeting. Are there any comments or questions or corrections on the minutes? Hearing none, can we have a motion to approve the minutes as presented?
We'll make a motion to approve the minutes as presented, John.
Okay, Tina, motion to approve in a second.
I'll second.
Thank you, Homer. And Sarah.
Right, Member Alexander?
Yes.
Member Beckman?
Yes.
Member Johnson is absent. Member Peck?
Yes.
Member Weiner?
Yes.
Member Spagnola, or Vice Chair Spagnola?
Yes.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. And thank you to Tracy for her continuing excellent minutes. Appreciate that. Okay, we'll move on to item B1, which is a brief Assistant City Manager report. Sarah?
Great, thank you, Chair Martin, and good afternoon, committee members. I have a few updates for you today. First, I want to give you a continued update on our staffing and let any members of the public know that we have a vacancy in finance for the utility billing position. So we are continuing to try to keep all of our positions full in the finance area. And I just want to commend staff for doing a whole lot with limited resources as we've been churning through high levels of turnover, as many organizations have been post-pandemic. So that leads me into another update for you, which is an update on the timing of our annual comprehensive financial report. As you saw in my email, we had planned to bring that to you today for review, and unfortunately, it's not yet ready for your review today. We are planning now to bring that to you at your meeting in February, and that's really because we've had significant staff turnover in every single position that's responsible for that report, and also a brand new auditor. So for the first time in 5 years, the city has a new auditor. And so there's just a lot more, legwork and building of the financial report on their end as well. So we're in the final stages of preparing that and look forward to bringing that up to both CPAC and council in February. And I also have a quick update, just in case anyone didn't tune into council. There were a couple items that council considered after CFAC's recommendation, and so I just wanted to report out on those. Council did take up the council compensation item and did comprehensive reserve policy, which includes the pension reserve policy as part of that before we proceed. So we'll be doing that as part of the budget process for the coming fiscal year. So thank you also for your input on that. And we'll keep you posted as those next steps progress. It'll be probably a few months now, given that we will develop that policy and incorporate that into the budget cycle. And then the last update I have for you today is that the city did receive proceeds from the sale of 2783 Coral Avenue, which was a question from last time. We just received them at the last day of the calendar year, so after your last meeting. And so per the resolution in 2016, there's an opportunity for Steve Beck and council to revisit the prior priority and reconsider or reconfirm the prior priority to potentially put that funding towards paying off the fire station debt. So we will also be incorporating that into the budget process for the upcoming fiscal year and bringing that back to CFAC with the budget process. And that concludes my update.
Thank you, Sarah. Are there any questions for Sarah?
John? Yeah, I've got a two. Regarding the billing clerk, would now be the time to look into a lockbox?
That's a great question. We have actually looked into a lockbox, and so we will likely be implementing that as an efficiency. It's very cost effective, and we're still actually staffed at a lower level than has been the prior utility billing staffing level, even after we fill this vacant position currently. So we think that that will certainly help from the capacity standpoint.
That's terrific. Art, you'll be pleased to know that that billing clerk was split between water and sewer. Smile, Bart. It's another $50,000 a year. My next favor to ask is that prior to our next meeting, it would be possible to receive the annual financial report a little earlier than Thursday afternoon or Friday morning, since that meeting will also include a WRF report.
We will definitely keep that in mind and get it to you as soon as it's available. I understand the lengthy packet that will be before you next month, so we'll do our best.
Thank you very much.
If I can, along those lines, Chairman Martin has substantial and I think excellent input into that review. If his comments could be taken ahead of time, that would probably cut down on meeting time. And he could, anyway, I think he adds a lot to the process. And if you could take that as a special subcommittee or whatever, I think it would be time well spent.
Any other questions for Sarah? Seeing none, we'll open it for public comments. Hiram, are there any? Hiram, are there any public comments?
There are no raised hands.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you, Sarah. Let's move on to the next item, B2, which is a presentation from the City Council regarding our review of the fiscal year 2021. Financials.
Chair Martin, just as a formality, I apologize. If the city clerk were here, she would probably ask for me to take a roll call vote on B1, even though it's somewhat of a formality since it is a business item.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. We're just receiving a report. There's no action. I mean, do you do that with the city council, Sarah? Just provide a report.
I don't probably have all of the background as to why this on this agenda was
the same format that we've been using for a long time. Barbara, I think, first constructed it a few years ago, and I just followed on using the same format. So I don't plan on going through it here with you unless you really want me to, but pretty much just summarizes what we talked about last meeting. So I think probably the more efficient way would be to just ask if you have any questions or if there are any corrections or anything to change before it goes to the city council. Okay, so I'm not hearing any. So it will go to the city council next Tuesday, is that right, Sarah?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Hey, John, I had a comment, Barbara.
Okay, go ahead, Barbara.
Yes, I kind of changed that format a few years ago because I thought we were too detailed and I wanted to keep it higher level and let them see not all the details in the ledger and the transfers, just where the money was being spent. And generally speaking, it was well received, but I certainly wouldn't be offended if you guys changed the format or council wants more or less detail. But my experience is, unless they're being super nice to me, that it's worked out well in the past.
It has worked out well. When I gave it last year, they accepted it. But the one overriding question that they always ask me is, were the expenditures made in conformance with the measure? And, of course, the answer to that is always going to be yes. This year, we didn't really even see anything that we questioned very much. So, it's pretty straightforward. Except this year, the one exception is that this year there's a very big carryover. Much bigger carryover than in prior years. But I would say that's the only exceptional thing about this year.
The other thing you want to think about is the public is going to be viewing is probably maybe a little more closely now because of the Measure E. So that's the other reason I like to keep it high level and show them where the dollars are going.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, my only comment would be that we appreciate the staff and when Katie was here developing a fairly nice framework for what qualifies and what doesn't qualify. I think that's important to know the how they're combined or not combined and what falls into what qualifying category. I think that was very helpful, at least for me as a committee member, to judge compliance or non-compliance.
Thank you. I do remember that now. Yeah, I'll review that before I give the presentation. I believe that Sarah's staff report that you presented to us last meeting was pretty comprehensive, Sarah. And I imagine you're going to have a similar staff report for the city council that gives the background on the two measures.
I'll double check what's been done in past years, but I certainly have the information available. And as I recall from the staff report for CPAC last month, the discussion about what qualified ended up culminating in, I believe, a council resolution that summarized it into four bullet points that I did include in the staff report last month. If you'd like to reference that, I think that was after perhaps some of the tables and framework that you're referencing.
Right, because my report really doesn't address those things. My report just looks at how things were spent and what kind of revenue was received, but it doesn't really look at the origins of the two measures so much. So that would be helpful if you could give the report and say.
Right, I'll check on what we've included. I think as it stands now, it's currently, and I see the city manager on here, so he may have more background than I do. It's currently a presentation item to council from the chair of CFAC rather than staff.
Yeah, that's correct. Usually it shows up in the form of a presentation. And we can go back and look and see if there was additional information on consent, but I think typically it's just a presentation directly from the chair.
Okay.
So we can look at that and, you know, see if we want to include something just in the background material for them.
Okay. this one, Sarah, I think we do need to have a motion and a second and a vote. So can we, is anyone willing to make a motion to accept this presentation to go to the city council next week?
I'll make the motion to accept the presentation prior to going to the city council.
Second.
And Steve, back second. Thank you.
Okay, roll call vote. Member Alexander?
Yes.
Member Beckman?
Yes.
Member Johnson? Absent. Member Peck?
Yes.
Member Wiener?
Yes.
Vice Chair Spagnola?
Yes.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. Okay, so we'll move on to item E3. This is the big item for today. And it's an update on the city's OPEB, that's other post-employment benefits liabilities. Sarah, I think maybe we have the actuary with us today, do we?
We do. I can kick it off with a few introductory comments, and then I'll hand it over to our actuary. And thank you for the introduction, Chair. We wanted to provide you with some information, both in follow-up to CBAC's interest in the OPEB report last year and the questions that came up at your recent meeting where we discussed both unfunded liabilities. We wanted to give you an opportunity to dig in a little bit deeper and understand more fully the OPEB side of things. And we've also had the opportunity to do some more research on the history of how the existing OPEB liability has been addressed in the city over time, over the span of a few finance directors at least. And so today, a big picture, we've got really good news for you and for the city. The city's prior actuarial reports most recently did not account for the balance in the restricted trust that the city established in 2013. And so just within the last month, we've connected the dots with that trust, the actuary, Mr. Kane, whom you'll hear from in a moment, and our new auditors. And as a result, Mr. Kane will explain in detail how the numbers have evolved from last year to this year, but the bottom line is basically approximately a $4 million reduction in the net unfunded OPEB liability. And so that's really good news, especially as the city moves forward in trying to address the much larger CalPERS unfunded liability and gives the city some opportunity to consider redirecting some of the budgeted dollars that have previously gone to the OPEB liability towards potentially the CalPERS liability. So before I hand it over to Mr. Kane, I also wanted to address a couple of the questions that I received before the meeting. Many of the questions will be addressed by Mr. Kane's presentation, but a couple of them were for city staff. And so the current practice has been to budget for OPEB liabilities annually in the budget. That's not something that cities are required to do. Unlike CalPERS, we're not required to pre-fund the OPEB unfunded liability, and we don't send the money to a third party. In this case, we are putting it into that OPEB restricted trust that the city established in 2013, which is currently held by ICMA, now Mission Square Retirement. And so the practice has been to make a contribution when possible, and in recent years that contribution has been based on a year-end entry that's based on the most updated actuarial report. So especially with the implied rate subsidy that Mr. Kane's going to describe in a moment, the most recent contributions have been fairly high because the city's been trying to fund that that higher depicted unfunded liability. So while we're not required to pre-fund it, we have been making good efforts to fund it, and we are required to report on our annual financial statements what the liability is. So that's the GASB 7475 actuarial report that is attached to your packet. And I think a couple other questions came in about what the most recent contribution was. The contribution in the 2021 budget year was approximately $411,000. That is budgeted in various funds, all different funds that have staff, and it's allocated out on a FTE basis. Those costs are distributed proportionally to the fund, to the other funds, with the majority being in the general fund. We have been budgeting small amounts in the Q&E fund, in object 4913, to another question about where those show up in the budget. And so now that the dots have been connected and the actuarial report has been updated to reflect the trust balance, we will be reevaluating our funding and budgeting policy with the 22-23 budget cycle, given the positive progress that the city has made. Finally, there was a question about the costs that are charged by Mission Square Retirement and the returns. The cost is is 0.48% of the total balance of the fund, and the return for calendar year 2021 for the allocation that the city has selected. And these are, it's a conservative balanced portfolio. That return was 8.73%. So today's conversation is really intended to be less focused on the actual fund, but I did want you to have that information available, and I wanted you to get more time to speak with our actuary, and so that you can really drill into how the numbers have improved over the last year. So without further ado, I will hand it over to Mr. Will Kane. He is with Total Compensation, and they have been the city's actuary for a number of years. So he has great familiarity with how the city's numbers have changed with some of the new GASB requirements that have evolved over the last few years. So go ahead, Will, and if you need me to share my screen, I can, or you can.
Sure. Yeah, no, I'm happy to do it. Probably easier that way. All right, did that work? Yeah, thanks for having me, everybody. Happy to talk about your OPEB plan and the actuarial evaluation today. I'll go through this presentation. Feel free to stop me as I go through it if you'd like to ask questions along the way. Of course, you can pull questions at the end. It's completely up to you, but I'm definitely happy to be interrupted as I go through it. For those of you who don't already know, which maybe you all do, the purpose of this actuarial evaluation we do, there's really two reasons to do it. One is because you're required to state a bunch of these values on your annual financials. GASB requires it. The second reason you do this valuation is so you have a sense of what the value promise is that you've made to make these retiree health payments in the future. You've made certain promises to your employees and your retirees to pay for a portion of their retiree health benefits. So this basically tells you what is that worth in today's dollars. So I'll talk a little bit about the benefit structure, and I'll talk about valuation terminology. Then we'll get into more the meat of the discussion, which is how this valuation has changed since 2019, because there's been some significant changes since 2019 in terms of how we've approached the plan, how we've been directed to approach it, and some of the information that's been brought to our attention since 2019. There's been a lot of moving parts. And then we'll talk about funding decisions and how you can view the plan in terms of deciding how much more you want to fund that trust that we were talking about. So get into it here. Current benefits. So the city only provides the statutory minimum coverage that's required under PEMCA for public agencies that participate in the CalPERS medical pool. You're required to provide a minimum benefit to retirees. That minimum benefit is $149 per month for 2022. So it's a pretty low minimum benefit that usually results in a pretty minimal liability to the city. However, under GASB 75, you're also assigned a liability due to what's called the implied rate subsidy. We could talk for 2 hours about the implied rate subsidy if we wanted to. I hope we don't do that. To give you a sense of what the implied rate subsidy represents, right now, pre-65 retirees and active employees are both charged the same medical premium rates. So if you have a 30-year-old active employee, their FASB 75 reporting, and we had been using that exception up until 2020. At that point, a lot of auditors started pushing against the exception, and the city asked us to no longer use that exception and now reflect the implied rate subsidy in our calculations of the total OPEB liability that you then disclose on your financials. So that's sort of what the implied rate subsidy represents and a little bit of the history of why it all of a sudden popped up on your numbers beginning in 2020. Some quick valuation terminology that you might have seen in the report. If you looked at the main number that we're calculating is called the total OPEB liability. That represents what the city owes due to the promise to provide future benefits. It only represents what's already been earned due to past service. So when you hire a new employee, they come in with $0 of total OPEB liability and they earn it over the course of their career. So the total OPEB liability grows each year as new benefits are earned and with interest, but it shrinks when you actually pay the benefits out. When you pay the benefits, you don't owe them anymore because you've now paid that year's worth of benefits. Second item, we have a fiduciary net position, which is a fancy way of saying the assets that have been set aside in an irrevocable trust that's for the exclusive use of paying retiree health benefits. Up until this year, we weren't aware that you had a trust that met this criteria. We hadn't been told about it. So that's why Sarah was talking about this year, we were reflecting a fiduciary net position. So you'll see that when I go through the changes since 2019. Each year, that fiduciary net position grows or potentially shrinks based on investment return, as well as when you contribute to the trust, or if you pay benefits out of the trust, it would shrink. Then you have the net OPEB liability, which is kind of the most visible number under GASB 75, and it represents just the difference between the total OPEB liability and the fiduciary net position. So it's in other words, it's what you owe in excess of what you've already set aside for the exclusive use of paying benefits. The last item I want to talk about here is the service cost. I mentioned how an active employee's liability accumulates over the course of their career. The service cost represents how much that person is earning each year, and it's called the service cost. So it's not what you're actually paying, it's not a cash cost, but it represents as the active employee is earning this benefit each year, that's how you can assign a value to what they're earning. Okay, so we talked about the significant changes that have happened since 2019, and broke them down. There's basically four of them, which is a lot. Normally you would see maybe one or two of these during that two-year period. So there's been a lot of movement for your plan. The first one was going from 2019 to 2020. There was a significant decrease in the valuation interest rate. So for unfunded plans, which our understanding at the time was that your plan was an unfunded plan, you're required to use a municipal bond index as the valuation interest rate. And just to set up, for the valuation interest rate is a very important assumption in the valuation. Just keep it simple. When the interest rate goes up, the liability goes down. And when the interest rate goes down, the measured liability goes up. So 2020 was essentially a bad news year in that we had two large increases in the liability. Going from 2020 to 2021, we kind of saw the opposite, where it was more of a good news year. So the first thing was we changed that participation assumption from 80% to 50%. That caused the liability to decrease by $1.4 million. Then the next change was including the trust, and as I mentioned, that did two things. So the first is relatively simple, where we just got to report $1.8 million of the actual trust balance as of June 30th, 2021, as fiduciary net position. So that it decreases your net OPEB liability by $1.8 million. It doesn't affect the total OPEB liability directly, because all you're doing is adding that fiduciary net position in. But as I mentioned, now that the plan is being treated as pre-funded, that does a second thing, which is that we can, instead of using this 2.2% interest rate assumption, we can use a 5.4% interest rate assumption. So under the rules of GASB 75, that's just how it works, where if you have a pre-funded plan, you use the expected rate of return on assets as the valuation interest rate. So by doing that, that decreased the measured liability by $1.3 million. So all in all, you had $1.4 million, $1.8 million, and $1.3 million, so it decreased the NOL by $4.5 million in total. There were some of these small other changes again that was worth $0.4 million. So altogether, that's a $4.1 million decrease in the NOL. So again, this sort of movement from 1 year to the next and then the next is not typical, but because we did all, basically we had this additional direction and new information that came to light from the city that did cause these changes. So in the end, we went from a $2.8 million net OPEB liability down to 1.2. But it wasn't nearly as simple as just one change causing the net OPEB liability to decrease by 1.6. It was a combination of several changes. Hopefully that helps add some clarity rather than adding confusion. I'll stop now to see if anybody has any questions or if I should just continue to go through these last couple of slides.
Will, I think you should just go all the way through to the end and then we'll go to questions.
That's no problem. Happy to do that. So, okay. Slide 7. So the impact of the implied rate subsidy. The implied rate subsidy can make funding decisions very complicated because the implied rate subsidy is not something that ever generates a direct cash cost. So of that point, that $3 million of total OPEB liability right here at the end, where $3 million of total OPEB liability, it's about half and half due to the implied rate subsidy and another $1.5 million due to the actual payments that you're expected to make to retirees at that PEMCO minimum level that we talked about earlier. So that makes it complicated because you don't have to fund the implied rate subsidy. There's never going to be somebody who comes to you with a bill saying you have to pay me $100,000 this year because of the implied rate subsidy. It's more of a conceptual cost that you're required to include. So you don't really need to set aside dollars for it, but that doesn't mean you don't need to set aside dollars either. I think on the next slide we'll talk about sort of the decision making there, but right now it's just a setup. It's not an open and shut decision. There are some considerations to take into account as to whether or not you want to fund the implied rate subsidy or not. So right now the balance in the trust is about $2.1 million. That includes like a $300,000 contribution that was made shortly after June 30th, 2021. So if you don't look at the implied rate subsidy, you have about $1.5 million in liability, and you have about $2.1 million in assets. In other words, the plan is overfunded. But if you do look at the implied rate subsidy, you have $3 million of liability, and you have $2.1 million in assets. So the plan is still not yet fully funded. Those are just the two different ways to look at it. So your decisions really revolve around the city's goal. If your goal is to show a fully funded plan, OPEB plan, in the city's financials, then you're going to want to fund the implied rate subsidy. Because forget under GASB 75, you're required to show that your total OPEB liability is $3 million. If your goal, though, is to plan ahead for future retiree benefit payments, which don't really include the implied rate subsidy, you really only owe $1.5 million in terms plan prepared, but I know you guys have some other questions and I may not have answered as well as new questions may have come up here, so I'm happy to turn it over back to you guys. Should I continue sharing my screen so I can flip to different pages here, or do you want me to share?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and leave it up for now, and we'll go to the members now. Let's go to Barbara first. Barbara, do you have questions for Will? Barbara, you're muted.
Sorry, I was muted. Actually, no, I don't. I think it's really almost a policy decision here from our leaders, but I do appreciate the presentation. It did help explain a little bit. So no, I don't have any. Thank you, John.
Okay, Barbara, thank you. Bart, do you have questions for
him? No questions. I like good news.
Okay. Tina?
No questions. Thank you.
All righty. Steve?
Nothing for me, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and Homer?
No, I don't have any questions for at the moment.
At the moment, okay. Then I guess you can quit sharing your screen then.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it. This exercise that you do for the city, is that required annually or can it be done every 2 years?
So the requirement is that you do some sort of valuation every year because you need to disclose something in your financials. But GASB 75's requirement is that you do what's called a full valuation at least every 2 years. So a full valuation means we collect data from you about all of your participants and then we build the valuation from the ground up. For those in between years, what we do is called a roll forward valuation, where we essentially estimate what a full valuation would look like had we done one. So what I was, the June 30th, 2021 valuation that we're talking about here was actually a roll forward valuation. So you're due for a full valuation for 2022 and then another roll forward in 2023.
Okay, all right.
So it's kind of a little both.
And how much do you charge for one of these things, roughly?
It depends based on the agency, but for you guys, it's about $5,000 for a full valuation and then $2,500 for the roll forward.
Okay, the annual page of growth costs, I saw a couple different figures. One was $70,000 and another one was $196,000. That was confusing to me. Up with that.
So there's a couple things going on there. One is the pay-as-you-go cost can change from year to year as you have new retirees come in or drop off. The other thing, which I think is what's driving it, is the implied rate subsidy. And every answer that everything that looks confusing in the report is probably going to come back to the implied rate subsidy, where beginning this year, we include the implied rate subsidy in the pay-as-you-go cost, even though you don't actually pay it. But under GASB 75, it still counts as a benefit payment when that implied rate subsidy is essentially fulfilled for the year.
Okay, and then the $70,000 would be what the city actually paid out in cash to cover the cost for retirees. Is that right, Sarah?
I think that's right.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes, that's exact. Yeah, $70,000 is the actual cash cost that we pay each year. Exactly.
Okay, all right. And on that implied rate subsidy, a couple of different places. One is said in the report that in 2019-20, OMA was required to do it, but then further on in the staff report and also in your actuarial evaluation, it indicates that it's actually optional.
Right. So it's what I mentioned, where in our view, you would qualify for the exception under the actuarial standards of practice and under GASB 75 to not include the implied rate subsidy, because there's an exception if you participate in a large, sustainable, pooled health plan. And typically, Total Compensation Systems has taken the view that CalPERS medical pool meets that criteria, and therefore, we can use that exception to not reflect the implied rate subsidy for you. But as I mentioned, beginning last year, against that, and basically asking cities to ask their actuaries not to use that exception. You were one of those, so that's why it's not necessarily optional, but there's an exception that can be applied, but you've been instructed to stop applying it for the city.
Okay, I mean, it makes sense to me that because of the fact that the city is part of the huge CalPERS medical plan, that it really doesn't matter that much whether or not the city provides benefits to its retirees. Do most of the cities or agencies who are in the CalPERS plan provide benefits to their retirees? Because that's what was going to push up the rates for the whole plan. Is that correct?
Yeah, it comes down to sustainability. And the fact that the rates are combined for actives and retirees, if that wasn't sustainable, if there was an inkling that CalPERS would need to separate those active and retiree rates, you know, begin charging $400 to the actives and $1,000 to the retirees, then we absolutely could not use that exception and we would need to reflect the implied rate subsidy. But, you know, the CalPERS medical pool is very large and should be, in our view, considered sustainable. But it comes down to the question of whether we can prove it's sustainable, and I don't want to get into all of the actuarial politics that's behind it, but it's sustainability is what it comes down to. And I agree with you that it makes sense. If anything's sustainable, you would think the CalPERS medical pool is sustainable.
Right, but the concept is that the city is actually having to pay more for a higher premium for active employees because of the fact that there are retirees who are in the pool plan.
Yes, exactly.
But those retirees are from agencies all over the state.
Right.
Not just Morro Bay.
Yes.
So if Morro Bay did not even offer this benefit to retirees, would Morro Bay's premiums for active members be lower?
No. They would still be right where they are, even if you have no retirees. Yep.
See, I don't understand what additional costs the city is trying to cover by having the implied rate subsidy. If it were me, I would just get rid of it.
If it were up to me, I would do the exact same thing. Unfortunately, we're at the mercy of GASB 75 and what the auditors will accept, and we kind of have no choice but to include it, but I agree with everything you said.
So have the auditors instructed either you or the city to include it explicitly?
Yeah, I believe the background is that going into that June 30th, 2020 valuation, we knew that this was top of mind for auditors, so we checked with a lot of our city clients to see, are you okay with us continuing to apply this exception? And the city, I believe, checked with their auditors, and the auditors said, no, we're not okay with that. We'd like for you to ask the actuary to apply the exception.
So that was the other auditor. Have you asked this auditor?
Not yet. We can certainly cross that bridge when we get there. With the ACFR, I think, you know, it's even if we still have to include it, the discussion about how to fund it, I think, is really helpful. But we can certainly check with the new auditor.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the city is only paying $149 a month for the retirees.
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not the actual cost should be $1,000 because they're old, doesn't really matter because the city's only going to pay $149.
Right.
So if that works into the rates that the city ends up paying for active members, that gets paid out of the current budget every year. So I don't see how that accumulates into a big fat liability on the city. Doesn't make any sense.
You have it, like I said, you have it exactly right, and I agree with everything you said. Some of the thinking, I believe, behind it to rationalize it is that, like you say, you would be paying more for actives, but like you say, you're already paying that. But that is the idea, is to account for that additional cost that gets shifted over to the active coverage instead.
Okay. Another thing, on your actual evaluation, on page 4, you make a statement that 65 and you count them separately?
Yeah, so for an active employee who's say 40 years old right now, they generate a pre-65 and a post-65 liability, because if they retire at say age 60, they'll have 5 years of pre-65 coverage, and then, you know, the rest of their lifetime is post-65 coverage.
And in your evaluation, you include a 2.75% increase for payroll growth?
Right.
And it seems like you say that you know that results in an error, but if the benefit isn't based on payroll, it's a per full-time employee rather than how much they get paid.
Right.
Why do you include an escalator for payroll?
So that assumption, you're absolutely right, that assumption is not nearly as important here as it is for, say, the pension actuarial valuation, where that benefit depends on pay. The only reason why we have to use it is it's a very actuarial thing where when we divide up how much of the benefit an employee has accrued, we scale it over the course of their career, but we have to ratio it based on their expected salary. So in other words, they accrue less of the benefit early in their career and more later. It's a function of the required actuarial method that we have to use under GASB 75, trying to keep it surface level here. But you have it right that it's not a very important assumption, but we're required to disclose it, and it only matters for that, like, behind-the-scenes actuarial calculations.
Okay, so you really can't plug in zero?
No, if we use zero, it would change your total OPEB liability a little bit, and it wouldn't be a reasonable assumption either, so no, we can't use zero.
Okay. And then it says that, the report says that we have not been asked to calculate an actuarially determined contribution. Isn't that like standard, or why not?
So actuarially determined contribution is a bit of a tricky term. It's defined under GASB 75, and so even though I'm an actuary and I can determine a contribution, that doesn't make it an actuarially determined contribution under GASB 75. GASB 75 defines actuarially determined contribution as something that the city has adopted, and so until the city actually adopts a contribution amount, I can't label it as an actuarially determined contribution under GASB 75, because for me to do that, you guys would have to tell me, here's exactly how we want you to calculate that EDC, as it's called, actuarially determined contribution. So it's a little bit of a chicken and an egg thing, but no, it's not standard for us to calculate an EDC. Does that make sense?
Actuarial evaluations for any agencies that are enrolled in the California Employer's Retiree Benefit Trust?
Yes.
Don't you have to calculate it for them?
No, we don't have to. An ABC is only a GASB 75 term, and for what they contribute to the CERT, it's called, they kind of make the same decisions that you're making of how much do we want to contribute this year. Some of them have a set method of, okay, we want to contribute X dollars per year. Some of them make the decision every year based on budget.
Okay, so the CERT doesn't actually use that as a guideline?
No.
For the contributions?
No, they ask every 2 years for the agency to provide them some information, but usually the agency would just say, we make this as an ad hoc decision every year without a set method for the actuarially determined contribution, and CERT has no problem with that.
Okay. So, as an actuary, did you have to look over all the documents for the CFPB's trust that they have?
Are you talking about for you specifically, or in general?
In general, for your determinations.
No, it's really not up to us to determine whether a trust qualifies under GASB 75 or not. That's really up to the agency and their auditors as to what they're comfortable with. For the common ones, like the CERT or PARS has a Section 115 trust that's commonly used, it's not really a question. For kind of more of the off-brand ones, like you have, that's where it becomes more of a question as to whether it qualifies or not, but that's not, in the end, our not up to us to make that determination.
So since it's not a Section 115 trust, is that something that the auditors are going to be rendering an opinion
I've already checked in with the auditors on that, and there are actually, under the tax code, a variety of different types of restricted trust that can be counted for these purposes under GASB 74 and 75 and under tax code. And so, yes, we've sent the auditors all of the documentation associated with the city's existing trust, and they have determined that it does qualify.
Okay, and I imagine they'll be saying something about that in the report or the annual.
So that's where the we were able to request an update from Will to the actuarial report and get to the numbers that you have in your agenda packet today. And so those are the numbers that the auditors will incorporate into the ACFR.
Okay. I mean, because it's such a big change, you think they'd almost have to comment on it, right?
Yeah, I'm not yet sure how to handle that.
Okay. Finally, Will, the last question I had directly for you, it has to do with the recommendations that you make on page 19 of your report. Is that just boilerplate, or is that something that the city really needs to look at and give some serious consideration to?
It is boilerplate. We don't change it for you at all, and that's why it kind of says that you may already be doing some or all of these suggestions. We really more provide it as a service for some of the smaller agencies that might want a little bit of guidance over how they should do their record keeping when it comes to retiree health benefits. So we have no reason to wrong there, and it's not up to us to penalize you or oversee that you're doing these things.
Okay, I mean, but as far as I know, that's not something that staff has ever made a report to the council on or to this committee on. It's just something that is in this report and there are states. I mean, do you think it's something that should be elevated?
Is that question's for me?
Yeah.
You know, I have no reason to believe that you're doing any of these things wrong when we get data from you, especially, you know, when you participate in the CalPERS medical pool. They already do a lot of these things for you, where they're doing a lot of the record keeping around who's electing what coverage. So I think you guys are doing fine on these things.
Great. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
The only last thing is, and this would be for Sarah, and maybe, I don't know, Bill, if you're familiar with the SERP, but their management fees or their operating fees are actually 10 basis points annually on managed assets. And from what I just heard from Sarah, the ICMA is charging 48 basis points. I haven't seen any reports to that effect, but I think that's what you said.
Yeah, my response to that would be that, you know, as part of the next steps associated with the Section 115 trust on the CalPERS side, we would look to evaluate whether it makes sense to keep these OPEB funds in the current trust or to consider moving them to the Section 115 trust provider that we go with for CalPERS.
I think that'd be a study well worth taking. Yeah.
John, I do have a question for Will. Came up. Did I hear you say off-brand like the one you use?
Yes.
Could you explain that in a little more detail, please?
Yeah, sorry for the potentially poor choice of words, but there are five main trusts that we see. So we have about 500 clients in California that we do GASB 75 valuations for, which is a lot. So we have a lot of experience in seeing the different trusts. There's the CERT that we were talking about, which is offered by CalPERS. It's probably the most popular. And then you have PARS. You have Futurus, which is managed by Keenan and Associates. Those are the three that would be available to you. The other two are more school district focused, where there's the Self-Insured Schools of California and there's the Community College League of California, both of which have trusts that you might be able to join if you really wanted to, but typically they're for schools. Those are the five that we see. And every now and then we'll see what I called an off-brand one, which in other parts of the country, maybe it's a lot more common, but in California, that is not a trust that we see typically. Does that answer the question?
Well, yeah, I think when Sarah smiled, she answered the question.
Homer, is that your only question, Homer?
No, I have some questions for Sarah.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
This may not apply now, but does Mission Square offer different investment options based on their employer risk tolerance?
They do. They offer three. So the city has historically selected the conservative portfolio. There's also a moderate portfolio and an aggressive portfolio that would have higher rates of return.
I've got three other questions, but I'm not sure if they're for Sarah or Scott, depending on the age of the question. On the first bullet point on our page 22 in our report, I see MA's 2013 agreement stated that the allocation of investment fund was made by the employer. Do you know who made the original investment decisions?
It looks to me like the finance director at the time did. I don't know what input may have gone into that. I did review the city's investment policy again, and it looks to me like the investment policy that delegates investment decisions to four city employees would be consistent in this case. But I don't know with 100% assurance back in 2013 what input may have been considered in her decision.
Do you know that since the agreement was established in January 2013, if the allocations were ever changed?
I don't know with certainty, no.
Do you know if the city council was ever involved in the investment decisions?
I just know what I could see from the public record, which was the resolution back in 2013 establishing the trust. And I did notice that the contract with ICMA, which incidentally I was informed that we missed a couple pages in that scanned copy, so that is going to be updated for the public record and the agenda packet later tonight or tomorrow, just as an FYI. But attached, so that was not an official attachment to the resolution, so it's unclear to me whether council was involved in investment decisions in 2013, but it is clear that they established the restricted OPEB trust with ICMA at that time.
I actually looked up that agenda item, and just for FYI, that was on the consent calendar. It was not pulled. It was not discussed. So you think that really basically Susan Slayton used the city's investment policy that we look at every quarter to make the decision on the investments for this trust? Is that what you're kind of assuming?
I'm not totally comfortable drawing conclusions, having not been here.
One other thing on this. I understand why retirees 64 and younger would want to continue with CalPERS as their health care providers. However, it doesn't make sense to me why retirees over 65 would want to continue with CalPERS considering the monthly expense. If I'm not mistaken, about 20% of those 65 and older, more of their retirees continue with CalPERS. Considering that those 65 and older continue to drive the OPEB expenses, has the city ever considered reaching out to all retired employees when they are 64 and explaining that there are other options available besides CalPERS?
I would have to consult with our HR staff on that. I think that's part of the conversation around the participation rate, though, is that only roughly half of our retirees are utilizing it. So that would lead me to believe that the other half are using the other.
Well, based on the statistics, I know we couldn't find where I saw it, but based on the numbers in the actuary report that we just reviewed, and based on the total number of retirees, it seemed like, if I recall correctly, about 20% were still taking advantage of the CalPERS. Not 50, but 20. But it doesn't make sense to me why anybody would stay on CalPERS, considering that there's some great other options for substantially less money.
Yeah, I mean, just anecdotally, what I've heard from HR is that some people just prefer to continue with the same doctor and the same plan and are more comfortable, ensuring that there's no changes to the medical providers that are available to them. But again, I would really have to consult with HR staff who works with this more closely to comment more effectively.
Thank you. Thank you, John. That's all I have.
Thank you, Homer. Does anyone else have any questions for Sarah or for Will? No? Okay, then we'll open public comments.
There are no raised hands in the queue, Chair Martin.
No raised hands, okay. Well, so we have a recommendation.
John?
Staff. Yes, Barbara?
Can I make a discussion before we vote?
Yeah.
I know that we're only supposed to receive and file this report, but if it's okay, I'd like to make a suggestion for our committee to consider. At last Tuesday's meeting, the City Council heard the same presentation we did regarding the pension UAL. The four staff recommendations that we voted on in December were basically the same. Before the City Council vote, the mayor added an additional item, and I'm going to quote, "Establish a pension funding policy that is integrated into the comprehensive financial reserve policy and bring back to the City Council for approval prior to implementing 2, 3, and 4 above." They voted unanimously on the four staff recommendations plus the mayor's addition. If the committee agrees, I'd like to recommend to the City Council that they add an additional item. And it would be something like this. In conjunction with the pension funding policy, an investment policy would also be developed. The investment policy would include a targeted allocation between fixed income and equity assets based on the City Council's risk tolerance. The new policy would be reviewed once a year.
Okay, I'll take that as a motion.
Is that a motion or just a consideration to discuss?
It's a, before we can discuss it, we have to have a motion and a second. So does anybody want to second that? Okay, for discussion, I'll second it for discussion.
Well, the reason I even brought it up was based on Sarah's previous comments about the fact that she wasn't sure whether or not there had been any changes at all since this was established and that it was never discussed in front of the City Council. And we don't know today how the City Council feels about how these funds have been invested. And it appears, obviously, from their meeting on Tuesday that they're going to move away on the pension UAL and establish a 115 trust and use a third party to manage the funds. I just thought it made a lot of sense that they include an investment policy along with the policy that the mayor recommended.
I understand. And I believe, Homer, if I'm not mistaken, that the way it stands now, it's entirely, according to the resolution that I saw, it's entirely under the authority of the of Sarah. Basically, Sarah is the trustee, and she makes all the decisions on it. That's the way I read it.
Well, I'm wondering whether or not, just so Sarah doesn't get a lot of heat if things don't go well, that the City Council somehow gets involved and gives her some cover.
Well, either Sarah is the trustee or the City Council is the trustee, but the trustee is the one who makes those decisions. I mean, the City Council can instruct, I suppose, but I believe, I'm not mistaken, the trustee has the authority.
Do either Sarah or Mr. Collins have any comments on this?
So unfortunately, Mr. Collins had to leave the meeting. Like I said, I don't have a whole lot of clarity around how it's been done always at the city. I think our intent, especially if we establish a new Section 115 trust, would be to take to council the formation documents authorizing the establishment of the 115 trust and then to provide them information about who we've selected and what the portfolio options are at the time, so that at least up front, we would be getting that type of direction from council. Most of the providers, the three that Mr. Kane mentioned, are the same three that NHA advisors mentioned. So we'd probably be looking at one of those three, and they basically offer, you know, anywhere from 3 to 6 different portfolio options with different risk levels. It's not the type of thing that I or any staff member would be actively managing or making changes to on a regular basis. So that provides some context.
No, I understand that. It's basically establishing of those 3 to 6 different options, which is all based on risk tolerance,
right,
that the city council, the elected officials, are the ones that say, we want to use the moderate tolerance, the moderate option, or whatever, versus having just one individual decide that they would use the most conservative option, which may be what the city council decides. I don't know, you know, but at least the city council would be the ones that would be dictating to the city staff what that should be. My feeling, John, is that we elected those 5 people, and we ought to trust their judgment. Not that we don't trust Sarah's, but, you know, and they're going to basically drive their decision off of what the staff recommends anyway, right?
So,
Homer, I think, hold on, what I'm thinking.
John, point of order, are you deeming this part of B3 on our agenda?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. So basically, Homer's saying that the city council, when they considered the CalPERS liability last Tuesday, they added an item to the recommendation that there should be this comprehensive investment policy for the
what they added was a pension funding policy.
Okay, all right, okay. So you're saying the city council should add an investment policy for these trusts that the city has and is going to be creating.
And this current trust is managed by our off-brand provider.
Okay. I think that is within this item for discussion. We're talking about OPEB, right? The trust, the OPEP trust, and you think that the city council should say where that money gets invested?
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's basically the motion and the second. Tina?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Just a slight clarification on terminology. You just said, John, that the city council should decide where that money gets invested, but there are categories within the vehicle itself, right? So to Homer's original, there might be 6 choices: high risk, low risk, moderate risk. It's not really the place or the types. It's really a choice of which level of risk. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So I just wanted to be really crystal clear on that termination.
I'm not suggesting the city council decide to buy Procter & Gamble versus Exxon.
I'm not saying you said that. When John said he rephrased it a little more loosely. So I just wanted to make sure that we were all clear. It's specifically that the city council would have to create a policy that advises our staff to level of risk or whatever that they want to make when making an investment decision with this one being trust or something to that effect. I'm not a financial person, but I'm just trying to say it again to make sure I got it. Fair enough?
That's the gist of it, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Martin, can we ask that the motion be restated, and particularly as it relates to the agenda item before you?
Okay, Homer, do you want to read it again?
In conjunction with the pension funding policy and investment policy that I'm going to add for the OPEB 115 trust would be developed. The investment policy would include a targeted allocation between fixed income and equity assets based on the city council's risk tolerance. The new policy
pension funding policy would be distinct from the OPEB trust?
In conjunction with the pension funding policy and investment policy for the OPEB trust. Is that what you want? How would you like to work this out?
Well, I'd be most comfortable with comments being limited to the OPEB liability, given that that's what's on your agenda today, unless you'd like to ask for potentially a future agenda item.
Okay. Well, if you wanted to hook this in with the this investment policy that would cover both, would we be better off with a future agenda item?
Let's address just the OPEB for today. So maybe just strike that first clause that mentions the pension policy.
Okay.
I concur a little bit with what understanding of the Brown Act is it's intended to notify the public about potential actions being taken by an advisory board or a decision-making body. And if others were interested in the city's investment policy and our recommendations thereon, I think you might have had people tune in that didn't tune in. That may be unlikely, but I'm concerned about sort of wandering outside the guardrails of the agenda item, however narrow they may feel to us. I'm sympathetic to the recommendation that Homer has made, the motion that's been made and seconded. I think the broader issue as part of that motion may be to bring back the investment policy for review and recommendation by this committee to the council. But it seems like we're trying to some degree, use this agenda item to address something that's happened recently. And I'm not quite sure that covers the interest of the committee to cover the investment policy and to make sure that the electeds are the ones making that policy.
John, I'm perfectly okay to withdraw this as long as I can get it on a future agenda item and hook in the CalPERS. And something that, Steve, I think you need to understand, the city's got current investment policy that applies to its cash. And I would want this to apply to its long-term pension and health liabilities.
I agree.
You know, I'm not sure that the city should be messing around with the current cash they have on hand, because that's needed for day-to-day operations. So I'm not suggesting that we would change the investment policy that's existing today. Create a new policy for these other things. And I'm perfectly okay to make this a future agenda item.
Okay. There's a world of difference between the money that the city has.
Operating money.
Invested.
Yeah.
You know, that's all limited by the government code. And it's a lot different when you have money that goes to a trust. Okay, so Homer, are you going to withdraw your motion then?
I'll withdraw my motion and make a future agenda item that somebody can tear apart.
Okay, and that'll be up to Sarah to figure out where we can squeeze that in and how that fits to her schedule for budget and such. So then for today, we're just looking for a motion then to receive and file this report. And that's the limit of our recommendation to the city council. Can I hear a motion?
I'll make a recommendation we receive and file.
Thank you, Homer.
I'll second it.
Homer, second by Tina. Okay, Sarah, we're ready for the roll call.
Okay. Member Alexander?
Yes.
Member Beckman?
Yes.
Member Johnson is absent. Member Peck?
Yes.
Member Wiener?
Yes.
Vice Chair Spagnuolo?
Yes.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. Okay. So now we have future agenda items. Looks to me like next month's meeting is going to be a real doozy.
Yeah, I agree.
Sarah, what do you have for us?
For February, we have the ACFER, the mid-year budget review, the investment quarterly report, and the WOLF quarterly report.
Okay, we also need to select a chairperson and a vice chair.
Correct.
We'll have new members next month.
Mm-hmm.
And when do you want to take up the Coral property sale proceeds issue?
As part of the budget process. So that would probably be at a meeting later in the spring, April,
yeah, and that's,
potentially.
This is an issue that we had a problem with last year. Was we don't have a meeting in March. March is one of the dark months.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done that way because staff had said they were so busy with budget development that they really didn't have time for a CFAC meeting in March.
Mm-hmm.
As a consequence, last year we never got to review the 10-year forecast. And that's one of the things that's actually in our standing action plan that the city council has charged us with. And I think it was really because we didn't have that much meeting.
for the city manager about that, and my understanding is that the council typically sees the forecast in February.
Okay. As part of your mid-year budget review, that's the one budget performance report that you're going to wait and see, is that right?
I'm sorry, the one budget.
Oh, we used to get a quarterly budget performance report.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was none for the first quarter of this fiscal year because I'm not sure if all got divided before the time. So you thought maybe it wouldn't be that useful anyway because only a quarter of the year has transpired. So I think you're going to do something more along those lines for this 6 month mark.
Yeah. Yes. And honestly, this first year here, my intent is to look back at what has been done in prior years and typically do something comparable if that is feasible and still makes sense. So
it's just that there's so much for next meeting that getting it into the time period is going to be almost impossible. That's the problem. But we'll do our best.
Could you just list off the action items again for the next agenda, the act for the mid-year budget review?
And then it's the investment quarterly report?
It's the one I missed, okay.
And the WARF quarterly report?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. That will be on February 15th.
John, relative to the WARF quarterly report, this is my last meeting, but I'd like to point out that in our last meeting where this was discussed, it was November, but we were told relative to schedule that Cabrillo's managed project may or may not stay on schedule. On 11/18, I was given a schedule. On 11/18, given a schedule that said the project was going to be complete by January 7th, I believe. On early December, a sign was posted on Gitana saying that section was going to be closed for 2 months. And then after that section is done, they've got to go up under the freeway. So basically, I think you really need to question and look at the schedule. What we were told, quite frankly, doesn't pass the smell test. That literally on 11, again, let me say it again, on 11/18, we were told that they potentially were going to meet the January 7th completion date, but a couple weeks later a sign was posted saying it's going to be 2 months and then at least another 2 months. This all has financial impacts, and this committee can or cannot decide to look at the schedule. In my opinion, I think you really need to look at the schedule, and I think your cost is going to go up to $150 to $155 million, and when you get a viable concept for recycled water, probably another $15 or so million. So, anyway, best of luck.
Thank you, Bart. Okay. Bart, you have a half hour to get down to City Hall with your application.
Of January 4th.
No, it's been extended until today. Okay, well, that does it for us, I think.
Oh, it's, we're going to get your agenda item.
I'm sorry?
The deal was we were going to get the investment policy as a future agenda item.
Yeah, so you want it next month?
No.
Oh, sorry.
No, I just want it as a future agenda item. Future,
okay.
Mean next
All right,
month.
Well, in conjunction with the budget, I think it's what Sarah said,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, as long as before the city council makes their decision on what they're going to do with the money, it would be nice for them to at least discuss this.
Okay.
So,
right.
Bart, since you're the one that liked the concept but wanted it to be a future agenda item, would you like to make the future agenda item?
I'm not going to be here, but I totally think that's a good concept, and to put both aspects together as you originally suggested.
Yeah, but okay. So a future agenda item. Steve, do you want to make it? that you agreed to?
Yeah, I'll make that motion.
To make it actual future agenda. Okay, great.
Yes.
Go.
So what are we doing now? We're adding an item to the agenda. For the OPEB trust.
And the CalPERS.
And PERS trust.
CalPERS trust.
All 115 trusts. That an investment policy be established for all 115 trusts.
Okay, and we're doing this under the future agenda items, item C, future agenda item. So we have a motion by Steve and second by Homer, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Sarah, I guess we can roll call on this.
Are you okay with the motion, Sarah? Do you understand what you want?
I understand the request, yeah.
Okay.
Is this a motion to put it on next month? Or
no.
Is this a motion to put it on at some point?
At some point in the next six months?
Some point.
At some point.
Future.
Before the budget process where they're going to talk about the choosing of setting up the 115 trust. Is that correct, Sarah?
That's correct. I don't honestly know the exact timeline, but we will work to put together a schedule that can accommodate everything.
Cool.
Okay, so you would like a roll call vote?
Please.
Member Alexander?
Yes.
Member Beckman?
Yes.
Member Johnson is absent. Member Peck?
Yes.